Welcome to Sweet Tea and Therapy with AMP, the podcast where we spill all the tea from discussing the latest trends in pop culture to delving into the depths of therapy. We're here to demystify it all. I'm Adrienne McCollum-Smith.
And I'm Pamela Tippett. Together, we're your hosts on this journey through the world of media, lifestyle, and therapy. Whether you're sipping sweet tea or seeking solace, we've got you covered. So grab your favorite beverage, settle in, and join us as we navigate the intersections of therapy and everyday life.
Subscribe, listen, and let's dive into the conversations that matter.
On this episode of Sweet Tea and Therapy, we address coping with burnout as parents and therapist entrepreneurs, and the tea is all about Pam's experience at Freaknik in the 90s. Let's get into it.
Just saying how frustrating it is for me right now, because I'm back in a sort of burnout space.
Mm-hmm.
And I was there year before last, and I thought I cracked the code. I was there again last year. And coming into this year, I was feeling very optimistic and energized and relieved. And then it's just like, here we are again, burnout. Just feeling like, I can just tell, like, I know it now. I know it quite well. So, yeah.
What did you do to get out of it before?
I just kind of focused on just like what was important. Like I listened to like what I was telling myself I had to do, and I had to this and that. And I think my burnout this time though is not as much work related. I think it is parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And doing the other things, you know what I mean? Like running the business, seeing all the clients, trying to I guess like see the vision for like what's ahead, you know, trying to like visualize that, see what it looks like, how do I get there, what are the steps. It's hard to do all of that and then it's just something always pulling at my energy.
I 100% understand. I think what I've learned is to expect like that ebb and flow of burnout. Like there will be times where I don't feel it, and then there's times where I feel it. I think the key for me has been to expect that I will have feelings of overwhelm and feel the runaway feeling is what I call it. Like when I feel like I want to run away from it all and just set it all on a blaze and run away. And I feel like just with life being life, that doesn't ever go away. I think it ebbs and flows. I think sometimes it's really at the front and sometimes it seems like, oh, it's not there. And so I'm having what I like to call an essentials year. And I listened to another podcast called The Rest and Reset Code. And this lady, Maykay, talked about, you know, she's either in essentials mode, enhancement, or embellishment mode. And this is definitely an essentials year where you're just doing just what is needed as needed and not adding anything extra to the plate. And I think kind of being able to switch modes kind of normalizes the fact that sometimes you're overwhelmed and you can only do what, you know, only can operate at a certain capacity. I'm on power saving mode, if you like that better, you know, like I can have the capacity to do some functions, and I feel like I'm in that. But I think my key for me is I think I have, when I have bursts of energy, I think I do too much.
Yes. Yeah, like I want to do all the things, and you know, it just gets so exciting. Yeah.
I'm guilty, and I'm just, you know, I don't know how to, I don't know, but I think that's just the way that I am. So what I'm really trying to do is, like, a lot of times what I'll do is if I feel like I have nothing to do, and that's never true, I'll like, oh, I'm gonna try this, I'm gonna do that, I'm gonna try this. And even hence what I, you know, us doing the podcast and only doing so many episodes and then taking a break, you know, I was like, we can do this every week, and you know, you see the like thing we have, we were planning to do this, like, but I was like, you know what, I'm gonna try to not do that with this, because I want it to be something. We said this was supposed to be fun.
Yeah,
I think this has been a very good self-exploration exercise for me, being able to just be authentic and, you know, show up as myself. But I thought about doing too much when I looked at the grid we made. I'm like, you know what?
Yeah. That's a lot to cover.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm glad that, similar to like with me in private practice, I have tried to take the approach of growing with it, you know, and you can have the vision, and it's great, but it's also really good to just kind of feel the pace of it and make changes as you go. And that's pretty much what we're doing. And so I thought it was a good idea.
I have a whole thing about do what's called for now. And I think we ignore that simple question. I think, like, a lot of clients will say, well, should I do this or that? And I said, let's look at what's called for now. Where's your energy at? Where's your time at? Where's your emotional money at? Do you have any emotional money? Are you emotionally broke right now? So, and really, you know, that's the answer to what's called for now. And I think we think other things are called for now, but we really don't. And it sounds super simple, but the self-check-in is, like, so important. And I think even I gloss over that because I'm thinking, why is, oh, it's just this, or I could just do this, or I could just do that. And I'm very guilty of over piling my plate and then saying I'm burned out. I'm like, well, bitch, it's because you did all of this. That's one
thing
sometimes. And I know that I have, I get bored easy. And so I have a tendency to just overdo things. So I'm really in my, this is an essentials year. And, you know, in our little group, everybody's doing this. And it's really easy to get, swept up.
To feel like you should be doing something more.
Yeah. This is an essentials year. And people have even said, well, we haven't seen you on any retreats. I was like, I am going to do my own. And even that one's pared down. And then I'm just going to focus on what's called for now. Notice what I'm feeling and really allow myself to just have a year that's just based on essentials, not embellishments or enhancement. Mm-hmm. There are years, I mean, last year was definitely an enhanced year. And, you know, every year, every month is, you know, I'm just, like you said, going to pay attention. So I get that, though, with parenting, it ebbs and flows, too. And I think people will now sometimes say, oh, you're not so lucky because, you know, they're not little anymore. I'm like, you're never done. I mean, it just looks different at every stage. It's like there's no hands-on anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like in some ways it's not better or easier. It's just different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. So did you have an empty nest type of experience?
I did, but it didn't happen when I think people expect for it to happen. Like, you know, your kids go off to college. You know, I think I told you my daughter still has a chronic medical issue.
Mm-hmm.
So she had come or was going through one when she was in high school, but she learned how to drive and everything after she came through it. And that's when I had it. That's when I started feeling it, when I didn't have to take anybody anywhere anymore. So when I finished work, I didn't have to run, go do anything, because she could get herself home. She could take herself. So I was like, well, what do I do with myself? Like, after work, I don't have to run anywhere and do anything. And then the summertime, you know, you do the activities or you do it. And she's like, I have this, right? You know, and she's going on her own. So it happened, like, when she was in high school and became mobile on her own. I was like, oh, my gosh, what am I? That's when I started to practice.
Oh.
When I realized that I have some time, like, you know, because she was doing dance team, they were traveling, they were doing this and doing that. But then as that was coming to a close, she was able to do more of the stuff on her own. I'm like, okay, I literally, like, what am I going to do with myself? So that's when it happened, when she was actually in high school. So I went through it then, and it's really like a rediscovering of yourself, because so much of your time is wrapped up in, you know, hands-on parenting, getting people here to there and being present. And then you're not needed in that way anymore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more sad initially than a happy thing.
It's a mix of emotions. There was some happiness, but it was also some fear. There was also a little bit of sad, and sometimes there still is, because, you know, now even with Easter, there's no Easter egg hunts, there's no Easter out, you know, not in like it was, and planning for all that, those kind of things don't happen anymore. And those are really good times and good memories. Would I necessarily want to go back? No, but those type of things, like, fill up your calendar and fill up your time, and they're fulfilling, and although hectic, it's keeping you busy, and it's keeping you moving.
Yeah.
And everything. So there is a little bit of like, oh, but when I go back, no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think for you, like, what are you noticing now that you have a kid that's like in school, like, in, you know, really at the beginning of schooling and all of that? Like,
it's been difficult for me, not because I'm not sad that he's growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it would be easier, and in some ways it is, but, you know, he can be a challenge just with his, you know, behavior and his, just his personality.
Mm-hmm.
So I have mom guilt a lot because of how exhausted I feel sometimes around him, you know, or a lot of times, really. So I deal more with that, like, just mom guilt about, like, you know, he acts like he's attention starved, like nobody ever pays him any attention. And so, like, he does all these crazy things to get attention. And so I do wonder, like, am I not giving him enough attention? Because I am tired a lot, and I am just kind of like always looking to get away, and not like away in from the house, but go and get lost in my phone, or go get lost in a TV show or whatever, go and reorganize my closet and just be left alone. I do feel like I'm always kind of looking for those moments and frustrated when I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, he is just doing everything he can to have all of my attention and time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a really interesting stage for us.
I get that. I get that. And I, I had those types of feelings. My child wasn't an act out type of person, but she would more, you know, like shut down and withdraw a little bit. I think how I kind of just dealt with it is that I would have just carve out quality time. Like we would schedule in, you know, time. And so whenever the other attention seeking or other times where I might feel guilty or wasn't doing the things, I'd be like, it made it a little bit easier to say, it's like, well, let's, you know, right now I'm busy, you know, let's cover this when we go out to have lunch, you know, this weekend or whenever we do this thing. Because I think to recharge your battery, you do have to have a moment. And I think there's a healthy balance. And I feel like sometimes people feel like they have to be available to their children whenever they need it. But I think that's an unrealistic expectation because nobody ever is going to do that for any of us. You know, we can't have people's undivided attention whenever we want, how we want. And I think it's good to kind of teach a little bit of that. Like we have quality time, not quantity, but we're intentional about, you know, connecting with our loved ones, but knowing that it's just not even realistic. You always be available to our children all the time, every day. And I don't think it is realistic because no partner is going to do that either.
Yeah, I agree. I think that too. You know, but I know that I don't want more children. And so he doesn't have a sibling. You know, he's got an older, my bonus son, but, you know, he's 16 and he's active in his life, but he's 16. He doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
So, but again, you know, the little one, if he's got to be in somebody's space all the time. If it's not me, he's at dad's. If it's not dad, it's the brother. And then he just kind of makes a little quick circle, you know, and it's like, golly, man, can you not entertain yourself ever? Like,
I used to. That's a skill to teach kids, I think. And I think it's a lost art. Of teaching people how to self-soothe, how to self-entertain, because I think, you know, I'm a generation removed from you. Like, we didn't grow up with screen, you know, there were no such things as screens and things. And to me, people say, like, oh, well, I have an only child too. Like, oh, you should have a sibling. But I'm sitting here telling you, as I don't know if you have siblings, but I have a sibling. Unless you're going to have them within 2 to 3 years of each other, it's not going to be, in my opinion, super duper beneficial anyway. And you've worked with enough people, and I have too, that there's a point of diminishing returns with siblings too. Like, when they're little, they can be playmates, but then as they get older, I think there's more of like a this. And then as we get even older, like, everybody goes on about their life. So I think it, depending on when and if you decide to have siblings, I don't know how helpful that is in certain situations. I think it comes to, like, if you know, teaching your kids to not look outside of themselves all the time to be fulfillment, because even grown-ups do that a lot. And it kind of just makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up when people say, I'm just looking for my person. I'm like, well, look no further. It's you.
It's you.
It's you. And I like to hear that, but I think looking for somebody else to always fill your cup, you are already setting yourself up for some struggles, because you and I both know that, look at what we're talking about. There's nobody walking around this earth that's going to be able to always fill your cup.
Absolutely.
And that is your job. And we have to teach our kids that, I believe.
Yeah. It's just, you know, remembering everything in real time. You know what I'm saying? Like when you're doing the things and he picks every fight, he picks every battle, you know? And so it's just ebb and flow, and I'm surviving it.
I know you will. We'll always come and chit chat about it. And I just think, and I feel these are the things that, you know, you don't know until you're actually in the throes of it, that it's going to be this way. And sometimes I was like, how do people have a whole bunch of kids? But I realized that it works because the other kids end up like
entertaining each other.
Mm-hmm, and you're like out of it. So that's the one hard thing about having an only child, because it's more you're on the front lines. You're the only one. You're at the everything. So I get it. I had an only child. I have a bonus son as well. They're 8 years apart. So it's not easy.
Yeah, Cam was 10, I think. So they're 10 years. Yeah, they are. They're 10 years.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I get it. Well, we're here now. We made it to 26 with mine. And I'll sit here and tell you this, that I think in our dynamic, we just kind of grew up together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that helped a lot. We kind of both learned as we went along. So we kind of had each other in that. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be fine. I'm hopeful and optimistic, but I'll say probably the most challenging role I've had so far in my life.
I concur with you. I feel the same way. So, well, I know you got it. And so I would just say, I'm thinking about this. I know we mentioned that was RT today going to be the Freaknik thing?
Yeah. You dropped a bomb on me after the recording in a text that you attended the Freaknik.
I did.
And
let me add, my tea, y'all actually have real tea.
Yeah, you know.
I did. It's called Velvet Bliss. So I'm going to get that. So yes, I actually went.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear your experience. So, Tony and I started watching the documentary, and I was asleep within the first 5 minutes of it. And I did try to watch just a little bit more of it earlier today. And, you know, I'm learning not to allow much to surprise me about you. Because you are just full of surprises. And so initially my mouth dropped. I was like, Pam was at Freaknik. But then I was like, why wouldn't she have gone to Freaknik? I mean, you know, and at that, I was young, you know, as that comes up a lot. I think that's a common thread in our episodes and in our podcast, is the generational differences, because I had heard of the Freaknik because I have a young mom, but I don't think she attended or anything, but I can just remember hearing like maybe her friends talk about it or something. And that and the foot wash. I don't know if you know what the foot wash is.
I've heard of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it may be a similar type of deal. And so anyway, tell us about your experience. How did that even set the scene?
I will say my memory is foggy on it, I guess. I was in college. And my roommate at the time was just like, hey, I think we should go, because we're in Tuscaloosa, so Atlanta is like not that far away.
Right.
And so a lot of the people we knew in college were talking about going. It's like literally we could hop in the car and just go and come back. That was our naivete speaking. It wasn't going to be just like, oh, let's just hop in the car and go. Because we went in those latter years, right before, I want to say the year was 95, which I believe was one of the last few years. So the part, like, I feel like 93 was like that real heyday. It's like when it was, you know, the thing. But by the time we went, it was closer to the end. So basically, you were dealing with a lot of gridlock, just being stuck on the street, not really getting anywhere, not getting to the park. So we do get there. We hop in the car, not any money, nothing but the clothes on our back. And we're just saying, yeah, we're just going to go. And so we go, we get there, we're stuck on the street. And we decide to get out of the car for some reason, like on the street. Because if you watch the documentary, it's like the party was just in the street. I think initially, like, you would go to Piedmont Park. Well, we weren't getting there. So we were stuck, and we get out, or we find some place. We end up getting out and walking around. I could tell you that. I don't know how. And it was the kind of thing where people kind of assumed if you were there, you were there for the freaky activity. So even if you're walking along, people would just touch you.
Oh, no.
Like, even if you weren't doing anything, just walking and being there. So we experienced that. It's like, if you're female, people are just like touching you, trying to take your clothes off, trying to do that just because you're present.
Was that fun and exciting? Was that a thrilling experience for you, or was it frightening?
It was more the frightening variety, because it just seemed to me, because it seemed like things were happening that you weren't asking for, or it was just assumed that you were going to be a part of the freaky part of it. It's like you had no choice once you were there. It's like you were present. So these things are going to go on. So I really didn't like that part. It was kind of interesting to now be able to say that I went and I was in there, but it's like you're there and you're just walking around. But we soon find out you shouldn't walk around, because if you're out of your car and you're walking around, it's like it's an invitation to
that's wild. That is insane.
Yeah.
So you weren't like booty popping.
No.
Okay.
You wanted to go to see. I don't know what we were thinking. We weren't thinking. We just thought we was gonna go and see. Like, we wanted to be observers to the freaknik, because you're so close to it. Being in Tuscaloosa, you're so close. Why not just go and observe? And we naively thought we were gonna be able to just go park and watch what was happening.
But if y'all didn't have money, how did y'all eat?
Well, I will say we had money to go to a fast food place.
Okay.
It's not like we had $0. We had money, but I'm talking like $50, $100. I mean, we're not talking about like, because we thought we were going to go over there and come back. That sounds dumb, right? Does that not sound dumb?
Wow. Okay. So did you stay? Like, okay, so you get out, you're walking around, people are grabbing, touching, it's a little bit scary. And do you ever say like, okay, let's get back to our car and get the heck out of here? Or is there still some curiosity about like what more there is?
Well, I think the curiosity won out first. So we didn't just get back in. We kept walking, even though we were being manhandled at points. We're like, okay, we've got this. We just tell them no. But, you know, even saying no in a rowdy crowd, they don't always take no for an answer. But initially, we were able to tell people no. We got cussed out when we told people don't touch us. But we were trying to get somewhere to see something. And I really need to talk back with Lisa to find out what we were trying to get to go see. But we wanted, I think, to get to Piedmont Park. We wanted to see, because people said you could see celebrities and things there. I think we were hoping to see that. there's no plan. We had no plan, Adrian. We had no, zero plan. I don't know what we were hoping for, but I think we thought we just wanted to see something that signified greatness.
Okay.
And all we saw was crowds who were stuck in traffic. Remember, this was at the very tail, and I believe the last official year was 96, I think, I believe. And we went in like 95.
I need to finish the documentary to see what happened, why it kind of died out, because it was a big thing.
The reason what happened was why we didn't get to see a lot, and you'll see this in the documentary, is that roads were blocked off. You couldn't go certain ways. The police were out. They were stopping you from going certain places. They were really trying to make it where people would get frustrated and just leave. They were really trying to deter people from, you know, really being able to have any enjoyment. You could, all the streets were blocked. You couldn't go anywhere. So that's really what deterred us from like having the full experience. You couldn't get anywhere. Blockades, police everywhere. And when you did get out, you were manhandled, probably assaulted. And a lot of the things were just not accessible at this point like they were. I think the heyday of Freaknik was before I even got to high school. I mean, got to college. So I'd probably say between like the very early 90s, with 93 being the pinnacle. And then by 96, it was over because the Olympics happened that year. And Atlanta's like, uh-uh. Because Atlanta had the Olympics in 96. And I have the Summer Olympics, and you know, Freaknik is right in at training time. Atlanta's like,
Don't bring this shit here.
Don't bring that here. We're trying to be a respectable city. We got the Olympics this year. We're not having none of this foolishness. So that's why the Olympics kind of end up being the official end of Freaknik being there. And we just went that year before. So by the time we got there, they were effectively shutting it down. People were still trying to go to Atlanta to, in hopes that they could partake.
Revive it. Yeah.
Just people were just like, we'll show up and we'll still meet there. But the law enforcement there's like, no, y'all not, no, y'all aren't doing anything. And it was like the roads were set up to where the only thing you probably could do is circle back around and leave. You didn't go anywhere.
Wow. So were you on the Hot Mess Express at that time, or was it just like a, you know?
Oh, gosh, a whole time. By that time, yeah, I was. And a lot of different ways. I mean, I kind of had to be right to just decide last minute, no plan. Like, we're going to hop in the car and we're going to go. We're going to walk around Freaknik. Anybody with any sense would not have done that. So you can say, I'll go ahead and accept that I was riding the Hot Mess Express at that time for many reasons. Yeah.
I was going, well, y'all heard it here.
It wasn't an exciting Freaknik experience. Sorry, listeners, if you end up hearing this, no, it wasn't exciting. It was just like something I can effectively say that I went. We didn't have our asses out the window, like, doing that. But, we did have some scary encounters there, I'll tell you that.
It sounds like it. Well, I'm glad that it didn't turn out worse for you. I know, I'm sure it did for some others, you know.
The closest thing, the documentary, you'll see.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to make it through it. Oh, it's just so raunchy, but the closest thing I've ever experienced that is, I went to Black Bike Week at Myrtle Beach.
I've heard of
one
that.
Year. I don't know. I mean, it's a bunch of people, all the Black people riding motorcycles everywhere. And the women are pretty free during Black Bike Week as well. And I was just like, I really was like a new nice church girl, you know, kind of hadn't been through shit for real. Well, I had, but you know, like I just didn't know. And so I was like straight out of high school,
And like for you, I'll ask you because you asked, I mean, what did you do? It's kind of like you're just going for the experience and to take it in, right? You're going to see what it's about. Or did you have a plan when you stepped off in the place?
So what happened was I had a friend that I was really close to who had two older girl cousins that were in their early 20s or maybe mid-20s. They wanted to go and decided to let us, their little cousin and her friend, tag along. Mm-hmm. So I really didn't, I had never heard of it before then. I knew because they had explained that, you know, it's just where a bunch of people go on motorcycles and it was at the beach, you know. So in my head, I'm going to the beach, you know. And yeah, so it was very eye-opening. That's all I can really remember. I can just remember, I mean, it was a lot of people, just people everywhere on motorcycles or nice, you know, like old school cars. And you got the women, you know, kind of sitting on the drop tops and in their bikinis, twerking and playing with each other and just being free.
And so you've had a similar experience, I feel like. Yeah. And to me, the whole thing is like, people want to know, like, were you like some of the people twerking and stuff? Like, no, it's just like you're there just observing and watching all of the things that happen like around you.
Yeah. 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 I was in jeans and a t-shirt. I looked real basic out there. It's quite embarrassing now to look back on. That's one thing about me. Like, I can be a stick in the mud, like not on purpose. Like I might want to be super free, but I guess my ego won't allow me to just let loose like that. Definitely not in that type of space. And like,
Well, I can say this, like, when my experience doing like at the Freaknik, now we didn't go in there dressing jeans. Like, we had our stuff on, you know, we came ready in that way. But I, you know, it's not as though, I feel like there's levels to it. I'm not going to be having my ass out of the car window and letting people like smack it or do whatever else they were doing with it.
Yeah.
But we also came there, you know, with our stuff on, looking, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Looking hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Well, but I think if I had gone 2 years later, I might have been a little bit more appropriately dressed for the occasion, but still I wouldn't have been on the extreme end of the spectrum with it. I just, you know.
And I think with those events, like with the fact that there's levels to it, I think some people go with certain ideas and they're at a certain level. And then there's people that are coming, maybe they actually have bikes and they're going to parlay, is what we used to say. And then there are some people who are going to observe and just say, just see what it's about. So I think just because like I went to the Freaknik or you went to Black Bikers Week, it doesn't mean that I was one of the freaks at Freaknik. And I think that's the misconception, is that if you go,
then you must be a hoe.
Yeah, you're doing these things, and it's not at all like that. I think sometimes you're just an observer. Sometimes you're actually a participant. I think you go. Some people have different intentions when they go. So just because you go to those events, I think people have an idea about why people attend those events. And then for me, at least, it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to go get my freak on. And I remember.
Girl, just, it was fun. It was the like thing to do in that, during that time. Mm-hmm. And I think that the way it was marketed was like, it's just a bunch of college kids that like, you got to go if you want to get into these Greek organizations, you know, if you're local to Atlanta, you know, there was just a whole lot more initially to it than what it turned into, I think. And so I know for me, even as like a younger person, now this documentary has come out, I don't, even if you were with your ass out of the window shaking it, and you know, there wouldn't be any judgment from me. It's just kind of like, it makes you more lit because you've had these wild experiences, but then somewhere, obviously, you got off the ride and, you know, now you're a thriving, you know, mental health professional who's in private practice, who's traveling the world and hosting retreats and doing so many wonderful things for our community of just people, but also the industry, and creating spaces like this and spaces like Uncommon BIPOC. And so I love to have these talks about just kind of like who we are, where we've been, and how do you get here? Because speaking of misconceptions, I think that, you know, there is a misconception with this work and, you know, oh, well, you're a therapist, you know about all these tools and all these resources, your life must be fill in the blank. And usually that's a bunch of pie in the sky, unrealistic ideas. So I appreciate you sharing that experience, because you could have been embarrassed about it based on what it's turned into and not want to share, because people can take it and make it something more than what it is. So,
yeah. And I appreciate you for saying that. And I definitely don't think of myself as, you know, this wonderful mental health person. I just think I'm a human first, and I don't know. I listen to all genres of music, and there's this the Miley Cyrus song that says, you know, I used to be young. And she said, he goes, people say I used to be crazy. She said, well, that's because I used to be young. And I mean, I'm here now, but I was not always here. I was a young person at one point. I was a kid. I was a teenager. I was a college student. And this is a part of my life experience, and all of that brought me here. So yeah, I've done some crazy ass things. I'm going to sit here and be the first to admit it. Am I going to give y'all all the details? No, because I come from a time and a mindset I don't overshare. But I've had crazy life experiences, and because I was a teenager once, I was a college student once, and it just is what it is.
Amen.
It just is what it is. So at the end of the day, yeah, was I riding a hot mess express? Probably. Y'all already know. I've ridden it more than one time, but I can't even say that I would go back and undo any of this. These are really cool things to say that at one point in my life, I was there, you know. I got to be a part of that.
As we bring this episode to a close, we want to share a reflection mentioned earlier in this episode. It is, do what is called for now. Often, we will think about what we want to see happen in the future, but becoming aware of what is called for now here in the present is often overlooked. This is due to personal expectations. We have goals, dreams, and needs we want and feel we deserve, but the present holds the key to what will serve us best right now, and it is not always what we want or expect it to be. Take time to notice and become aware of what the present is showing and telling you. Then hold space for that truth. Grieve an expectation if necessary, and then respond in kind. Take care and keep it sweet.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Sweet Tea and Therapy with AMP.
We hope you enjoy diving into the behind-the-scenes world of therapy and everything in between with us.
Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and join us next time for more candid conversations and a fresh brew of tea.
Until then, take care, be kind to yourselves, and keep sipping on that
sweet tea.